This is Sarah Seven, and you are listening to Tornado Radio, where we're all safe and warm in the eye of the Central Texas music storm. So I am at the American Legion. We're in Killeen.
We're deep in the heart of Killeen.
Right.
And I'm here at the recommendation of Curtis Crawdad Brayfield because I just gotta talk with Catfish, who is fixing to gig here in a little bit. We were discussing your name. Okay, there's, you know, the stage name Catfish.
Right.
And then your actual name.
Yeah. Quite a bit of difference right there.
Yeah.
I got the name Catfish with the these whiskers I have.
Yeah, I got it. Okay.
Yeah, once upon a time, I worked as a welder.
Okay.
And the gal I was married to at the time, she had braided my beard, but she kind of liked it like, what was that Disney movie with the Captain Jack Black or Sparrow or...
Yeah, the
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Right. Yeah. So she made them into two braids. And
sure.
Long story short, my supervisor said, every time I see that guy, I want to go get my fishing scoops out. Next thing I know, I had catfish on my uniform there, and it just was something that never went away.
Yeah. Might as well just, you know, live up to the nickname, I guess. But yeah, and then Curtis was telling me about your actual name.
Mm-hmm. Spanish Basque, yeah.
Basque, exactly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Basco.
Yeah. That's one of those impossible languages, you know.
It can be.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, German has four cases, Latin has eight, and then Basque has like 12.
Yeah. It's crazy, right?
So it's like three times as confusing as German.
You betcha.
Neat. But yeah.
So you're from California. What brought you to Texas?
Yes.
Just the fact that I had never really fit in California.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like, I mean, the music out that way is a lot different, obviously.
Yeah.
And I've always leaned more towards blues and, you know, country western
things. More roots music, yeah.
Exactly.
What part of California were you in?
I was in the central San Joaquin Valley.
Okay.
Probably about 40 miles away from Fresno. Pretty almost smack dab in the middle.
It's so far from the only place I've been in California was Hunter Liggett.
Oh, goody.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Of all the military bases you could be.
Yeah. On a good note, I couldn't get into trouble because
they said
everything off post is off limits. I'm like, what, the two trees and a coyote?
Right.
Because the last time we passed was 30 minutes away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a whole lot of nothing out there. My experience with California is once as a kid, long, long time ago, and that California was different than the California I experienced in the late 90s.
Yeah.
And on the California that is now, I've heard it's very, very different. But
yeah, I got out in plenty of time.
Yeah. So it's not so much that you're coming here to California up our Texas. It's more like you're just trying to escape that California.
I would, yeah, and there might be a little bit more to it. I mean, it was just not working personally in my life and in a lot of people's lives that I was involved in at that time, and it was just a better thing to do. Plus, both sides of my grandparents were actually from Texas.
Okay, yeah.
So it was more like a homecoming thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, ultimately. But.
And you came here initially in what, 2010, was it?
No,
2009. 2009, okay.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a minute ago.
Yeah, I landed in Austin and
okay.
Did my time on 6th Street down that way.
Yeah.
About three and a half years.
Discography, the only ones I know about are the two that I've got, Smoke and Mirrors and Texas.
I think I have five in total.
Five in total,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the first one was, it was meant to be a tribute to the 9/11 situation that happened.
Okay.
And, yeah,
that was a minute ago.
Yeah, it was. That inspired a whole lot of music at that time. And of course, too, you know, there were people like Alan Jackson that was making tunes, and everybody was trying to do something, you know.
Yeah.
So I had done my first CD that way, and I released it a year later. And that kind of started all of that stuff rolling.
What inspires you?
Music?
In terms of writing and in terms of...
You know, I don't know. I've been one of those type of fellas that you just can't... You can't hardly pigeonhole me into any certain thing. And one day I might wake up and think that, you know, everything sounds country. The next day I wake up and everything's rock and roll. And I've got a little mantra. There's no such thing as bad music, just bad songs. And that's kind of how I view that whole thing.
Well, something that I've always been fascinated by is you can take a chord progression and a melody and some lyrics,
mm-hmm.
and depending on how you arrange it, in other words, what rhythmic groove you give it and what instrumentation you give it in terms of, you know, harmonics,
exactly.
You can take a country song and turn it into a rap song or a hip-hop song or a grunge song or a metal song.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like building a home. You start with the foundation, whatever that may be, and then you just kind of build upon it. That's how I view it.
Yeah. Well, and Curtis was telling me you work in a lot of different styles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you've got stuff that sounds jazzy. You've got country stuff. You've got blues, rock.
Yeah.
You know, kind of funk-ish. You know, 70s kind of, like that song, Here Come the Judge.
Yeah.
I can hear some of that 70s funk influenced into it. Yeah.
Nothing around.
That's one of my favorites. Yeah, I love that song.
Well, I imagine the advantage of being versatile is you can appeal to different crowds.
And that's precisely what I do when I work by myself. I try to do that even when I'm with a band, but more so when I'm doing a solo act like this. I just try to make a little music for everyone, just try to, you know, include everybody and please everybody, as many people as you can. You can't please them all, but...
Yeah. So when you're gigging, do you do as many of your own songs as you can get away with? I mean, how do you feel about doing covers as far as, you know, what crowds want?
That's an interesting thing, too. I'll interject a few of my own tunes as I can throughout the evening. And then there are a couple of songs that have stuck out that people actually request. And I am obligated to do them.
Big inside, that's big inside joke here, okay?
Yeah. Yeah, that one, surprisingly enough.
Well, with a title like that, it could be, you know, it wouldn't even have to be a good song, but with a title like that, you kind of...
Exactly.
And if that song is a fun song. It's a fun song to play, I'm sure, but it's a fun song to listen to.
That's one of the tunes that I never had an opportunity to record, and so you can't find that anywhere except for at the live performance.
Yeah.
Okay,
seems
there we
to
go.
Be the one that has really gotten popular. I mean, there's even T-shirts around town if you... You find them. People have the lyrics all over the front.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's
if
crazy.
We ever get a chance to do this again,
that's a mark of success.
I've got to get them to play that.
Well, I mean, yeah, we could even just do a, you know, grunge acoustic
sure
recording of it just to make sure that it exists.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and seeing as how, you know, we've got three songwriters here, obviously we're gonna want to think about this. Right now, you're doing solo gigs, which is different than being in a band, and it's quite an accomplishment, especially as a solo act, to...
Drummer still sucks. And more kazoo.
Yeah, more kazoo.
The electric kazoo. You need the electric kazoo. Every song needs an electric kazoo, right?
You better believe it.
No, but to make a living as a gigging musician is hard enough, but then as a solo act, it's also difficult. But you've been in bands. Thoughts on that? Being a solo act versus being in a band, all
it's
the ups and downs of that.
It's a completely different energy.
Yeah.
Like I say, I can be a bit more versatile when I work when I work alone.
Yeah.
But obviously the energy, you know, drummers flailing away behind you, and that just it gives you an opportunity to play different styles of music when you're with a band sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, to at least sell it.
It's a bigger sound. I mean, you know, no one has to work that hard to create the kind of vibe.
Right.
Yeah.
And I still work with bands on occasion. It just depends on what the event is.
Who's available.
What the event is and what, you know, the general consensus of the crowd might be. You know, if I know that it's going to be like some kind of an event someplace that... maybe one of the local organizations is putting on, and they probably lean more toward the rock thing. I'll try to dig out my musicians and show up with a band once
in
a while.
But, yeah, depending on what they want, yeah.
But then you're kind of limited, too, depending on the venue, because if you play in a small place, a lot of the time you can't control the volume of the drummer, especially if they're playing acoustic sets and stuff. You know, you're at the mercy of that snare drum. And sometimes, and then cymbals bashing around, and sometimes you're at the Elks Lodge or somewhere else, and
that's more than what they need.
Not really. And so this is where this comes in handy.
Yeah. Well, and even without a drummer, sometimes the guitar player, the lead player, can be too dang loud.
He can be. Yeah.
You know, I've had that happen where it's just like,
the bass player's never loud enough.
Right.
But,
says the bass player. You want to be heard.
You did a year-long stint at the canteen, and the canteen's been notorious for, like, if you go above a certain decibel, they're going to kick you off. Mm-hmm. They won't have you back. So, you know, that was... But then again, you also had Beekler Dave Buechler is a fantastic drummer.
I actually
and of course he had the Hello Kitty drum kit that you know right. he used to carry around.
Hello so that kind Kitty of helped probably keep it. Yeah. Aw, it's so cute. It's a
I actually
kitty.
Did 8 years at the canteen. From the time that I got here, I started playing with the Catfish really? Daniels band.
Catfish Daniels band. Yeah, so yeah, tell me about the bands you've been in.
The Catfish Daniels band, yeah, we had that going for quite a while.
Okay. And was that in Austin or was that up here?
Technically, it started out west, but okay. it kind of filtered over here to Austin.
Okay.
And it stayed that way till about 2016, 17, all right. somewhere in there. And it's still, you know, in its various forms, it'll show up once in a while. We'll, you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, like a once in future kind of band.
I just did something as a band not more than maybe about a month and a half ago. But this right here was a necessity to continue to keep on working. And so I just kind of started delving into doing the solo thing.
When did you hook up with Carly?
We're going to talk about all that?
Musically.
Yeah, just yeah.
Musically hook up. Okay, yeah. just so we're clear.
Yeah, that was about 2009.
2009? Oh, okay. So she came. Well, I know she's from California, so I assumed that she
You might want to interview her about all this. I don't know.
Sure. Fair enough. Fair enough.
We're just going to keep it to music.
Yeah.
We're just keep it to music.
We can do that. But, the magic of editing. And just what will I edit out and what will I leave in?
Right.
Anyway, but yeah.
Well, which was worse, though, her or me? Because you, you kicked me out. You kicked me out like, you know.
You, I can't.
3 weeks after
you kicked yourself in.
No, this is part of the story I haven't heard here. Yeah. Inquiring minds want to know.
That was at the Twisted Ranch.
Yeah. Oh my goodness!
Yeah. Well,
yeah. I missed that place.
What's that?
I missed that place.
Oh God! Strange. Too. That was strange. My home away from home. The hub.
A lot of us.
Well, yeah. That's where I mean, Curtis and I met. Actually,
is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. At the open mic there.
Yeah. Well, that was on Thursdays or something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And not only that, but also you know, as a songwriter, I mean, I debuted all of my songs during those open mics.
I think I've done anything a human being could possibly do at the Twisted Ranch.
Okay.
Yeah, you
we're not good. Yeah, again, musically,
literally.
Musically.
Yeah.
Something tells me that
musically and otherwise.
Yeah.
Okay.
Meanwhile, how did you drift up from Austin? There is kind of like this diaspora from Austin. This is kind of a running theme with Tornado Radio because, okay, Married to a Soldier, been all over the world. I mean, I traveled a lot before, and then when I found out that the Army was moving us to Texas, near Austin, I was like, oh, goody. And then I get here, and I mean, Austin is legendary, but it's changing. It's not... It'll always be a music town, I think, but it's becoming a tech town, and I don't want to bag on Austin because we owe so much to Austin, but...
Right.
There's this diaspora, kind of like the diaspora out of New Orleans, like you and I were talking about, Curtis. I don't think it's as bad as the New Orleans diaspora.
It wasn't as fast, but
ugh.
As it becomes more techy, it also becomes more rich. And because of that, it's forcing a lot of musicians out, and it's been forcing a lot of musicians out. Not to mention the fact that, I mean, venues just don't pay anymore. Well, they never did.
But you could afford to be flat broke.
When you paid the band $100 a man in '74, that's $100.
Right.
You know, nowadays, you know, you can't even afford groceries for the week on $100.
Exactly.
No.
So it's a big difference now compared to then. And in Austin, you can't get parking for $100.
Exactly. No.
So that's why people are moving out of Austin.
Oh, totally. How did you mosey on up here?
That was a love story all by itself right there.
Okay.
The folks that had owned the Twisted Ranch, I had been fortunate enough to get close with them.
Yeah.
And one thing led to another. They just kept bringing me up this way. And,
yeah.
you know, and so often I might as well just move up there instead of this commute. How that happened.
That totally makes sense.
I know you had a deep friendship with Mooch.
Yes, absolutely. Him and Lisa both.
Well, I think, too, the vibe, young guys, the 20-somethings that are playing certain kinds of metal, they can get work down there, and they have to commute down to Austin.
Right.
But I think up here and in Waco and maybe some other places, there's a different, it's a different vibe.
It is. And when I was down there in 09, through that little stint that I was doing, I was just catching the tail end of anything that used to be cool down there anyway. It was already on the way out, but there was still, you know, blues pumping out of all those old bars that were down there up and down 6th Street. And, you know, we played basically every place you could play on 6th Street and the surrounding area, that community there.
Yeah.
Did you play the Continental? That's like one of my dream gigs.
I spent a lot of time at a place called Nuno's.
Nuno's?
Yeah, Nuno's. And, wow, what else was down there? Rooster was down there. Friends was down there. Maggie Mays was down there.
Oh, that team.
Thirsty
Maggie
Nickel
Mays
was down there.
They're taking her away.
Yeah.
Oh, she never walked down Lime Street anymore. Mm-hmm. Okay. That was my 30 seconds. ASCAP BMI. That's another running theme.
Right.
There's a couple running themes on this podcast. Yeah. But anyway. But yeah, So you left the California scene for the Austin scene for the further north Central Texas scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and along with that that time that I spent with Mucha Lisa over at Twist and Ranch, I was fortunate enough to do a couple of jobs with Candlebox, and that was fun. Candlebox, from the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, those guys. And I had done work years and years ago with Tower of Power.
Wow.
Back from the 70s.
Yeah.
A long time ago. World-class horn section.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those fellas are no joke.
No kidding.
And while I was out west, I got, at that time, it was still about trying to, you know, achieve the big goal. We're climbing up the musical ladder, and I got a chance to open up for bands like Cheap Trick.
Oh my goodness!
Pat Travers, Mickey Thomas, Elmer Bishop. I mean, just a whole bunch at that time.
Yeah.
But I had, but as years went on, I looked into the abyss, and I didn't want to be part of that.
I've heard a number of people say that.
Yeah.
There was a guy, and this was at the open mic that was going on at O'Brien's at the time, which is kind of a once in future. But this was when it was kind of at a heyday, and there's this guy who looked at just how much alcohol was involved and everything else, and he was like, if that's what being a star means, I don't think I want it.
Right.
There are different kinds of success, you know?
Well, and that's the thing is you have to understand, as a musician, your job is to sell beer.
Pretty much.
And it doesn't matter what level you're at, American Legion Post, or if you're playing in an arena, your job is to sell beer.
Yeah, right.
We in the modern world, you know, we think of music as being a thing that gets recorded and people get famous and their songs get on the radio, but music used to be and still should be a thing that people just kind of do communally. Like when there's food and people get together, we have music. And of course, you know, we still have church music. People would sing when they worked to alleviate the stress of working.
Mm-hmm.
And not just, you know, the slaves picking cotton, which, God, did they need that. But the Amish do that.
Sailor shanties.
Oh, hell yeah, yeah.
And, you know, cowboy
ballads.
The cowboy ballads really were written to lull the cattle, you know, and stay in.
And the cowboys. And the cowboys to keep them,
at night, you know, because
No, we need...
They'd spook it, a coyote howl or hearing thunder off in the distance. Last thing you need is to be caught in a stampede.
We need
music. So, yeah, I mean, music is a larger part of life than just the 5 minutes I'm in the car going to the store or something.
Yeah, or the, you know, morning commute.
It's
yeah.
always been a part of my life like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's kind of weird that I never even thought about making music until I saw Chuck Berry and Jerry Lee Lewis.
Oh, wow.
When I was 16. And, like, the very next year, I bought my first guitar. And you kind of have the same story with your mom taking you to...
Well, yeah.
Blame it all on mom.
My grandfather had played with Merle Haggard before he's the Merle Haggard that we know and love today.
Wow.
And... he used to bring my mother to his jobs with Merle when she was just a little gal. And would sit her down in a little chair somewhere and, you know, off to the side of the stage, and he'd go out there and get busy and do his thing. And music has always been in my life as well. Legend has it that I'd be a fussy little baby, and he'd lay his guitar on my belly, had a Bixby tailpiece, you know, and play anything you want. You play on that guitar all you want, son, just don't mess with this. Right? And what's the
Tell
first thing that I'm going
to do?
Doing, oing, oing, oing. Right, so.
That's funny. Almost like he knew what he was doing, huh?
Yeah, right?
And on that note, this is probably as good a place as any to wrap up this episode. But I'll post the rest of this conversation in a week or two, probably. So you'll get to hear the crawdad and the catfish swap more war stories. And we'll all blame our parents, sisters, brothers, aunts, uncles, cousins, and whoever we can think of for our musical foibles. Or maybe instead we should just blame it on the swamp thing.
Sound. And never come back again. Blame it on me.
And until next time, this is Sarah Seven, wishing you, as I always do, peace be with y'all.